From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Well, times are changing, or at least the weather is, and here in Chicago, we got our first frost, so unfortunately, it's that sad moment for me when I have to say goodbye to the nice weather and get out all the winter gear, but hopefully wherever you are, you're staying warm. We're so excited today because we had a big feast day this past week, and a feast day for the very first time, and technically a solemnity, and that was of Our Lady of Champion, the first and only approved Marian apparition in the history of the United States. There on the local level in Champion, near Green Bay, Wisconsin, they celebrated that feast day on October 9th of Our Lady of Champion, celebrating those the 28-year-old Belgian farm worker, Adele Bryce, receiving three visions of the Virgin Mary in 1859. And it's an incredible thing that now it is an approved, it's been an approved Marian apparition, but now they have an official solemnity to celebrate each and every year. So that's kind of a big deal. And on today's show, we'll be talking with Father Joseph Aitona, the rector of that National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. He'll give us a little bit of the behind the scenes of how that came to be. And later in the show, we'll be talking with David Carollo, the executive director of the World Apostolate of Fatima. On October 13th, 1917, we have the Sun Miracle of Fatima, and we'll have him on to discuss that perhaps one of the most widely witnessed miracles in all of modern history. So we'll be asking him about the details of that great event. And later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project like we always do. For today, October 14th, we've got the Virgin of Protection from Istanbul in Turkey in the year 911. And we'll be looking at the might-be saint of the day. For today, we have Blessed Richard Crea. He is a martyr from Ireland, and his memorial is on October 14th today as well. And the question of the week, it's a good one. How can Adele Bryce, the visionary at Champion, become a saint when everybody prays to Mary, Our Lady of Champion? Don't you need to pray to just one saint for it to count for miracles in a canonization? So that's a tough question, but I'll see if I can answer that one. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week, where we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And perhaps this isn't a miracle, but it is in the supernatural or preternatural realm, you might say. 203 exorcists and 100 auxiliary exorcists from all continents met in Europe recently, and they elected a new president, and the numbers are going up. From 250 members that made up the association in 2012, now there are some 900 members, so that's a growing organization. I guess the world needs exorcists. And so the story says that the International Association of Exorcists issued a press release reporting that their 14th International Convention was held from September in 2023 in the Fraternodomus House of Spirituality in Sacrofano in the province of Rome. And 203 exorcist priests from all the continents took part in this meeting, as well as some 100 auxiliary exorcists. And so the outgoing president, he recalled the origins of the foundation and its first meeting in 1991, and they talked about the need of for exorcists. Jesus Christ, of course, is the source and model for exorcists, as he says. It's increased remarkably, markedly in the universal church, and they said that that they came up with some new guidelines for exorcisms as well, and so this was a big deal. This new meeting that occurred with over 100 members of this exorcist international exorcist organization association. So I guess something more to pray for, that these exorcists are formed well and can battle the evil that's all around the world. So for more information on this, you can check out the story from Zenit. You can go to the Miracle Hunter Facebook page and find that link and any of the other links that we post every week about miracles and things that relate to miracles. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in the fastest with the correct answer. And people who know me, my friends, know that maybe on some given day you'll find me in a pub playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic pub trivia. And so we had a question last week. We talked about Elizabeth Ann Seton, and we actually had a great interview about her on the program last week. So check out the audio archives. If you go to EWTN.com/radio, you can see listen to the audio archives, or you can download the free EWTN app. And so last week's question was, Elizabeth Ann Seton was the first American-born saint. Who was the second? And there were numerous saints in the interim, people who were from Europe who immigrated to the United States who became saints. But for people who were born in the United States, we have Catherine Drexel, who lived from 1858 to 1955, and she was the founder of the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament. And she was declared venerable in 1987, beatified in 1988 by Pope John Paul II, and also canonized on October 1st by John Paul II in the year 2000. So she is the second American-born saint. That's Catherine Drexel. And thanks for writing in with your answers for that one. The question for this week relates to the Sun Miracle of Fatima. And in the apparition, the final apparition on October 13th, 1917, in the midst of that sun miracle where the sun was said to be descending to the earth, Mary appeared in the sky, and she wasn't dressed in her normal Our Lady of Fatima attire. She was wearing attire recognizable from another Marian apparition. What was the attire of the Virgin Mary at the Sun Miracle of Fatima? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and send me a message that way. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Joseph Aitona, the rector of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talk a lot on this program about Marian apparitions, and we talk about how perhaps there is as many as 2,500 that have been claimed around the world throughout Christian history, and far fewer that have been approved by the local bishop and then perhaps later the Vatican. And in the United States, we have several reports of Marian apparitions, perhaps a handful of them in the 1980s and beyond. But it stands one of all the apparitions claimed and investigated in the history of the United States that has been recognized by the local bishop as being supernatural in origin. And that, of course, is Our Lady of Champion, formerly known as Our Lady of Good Help. And we had big news this past year. A local feast day was set up to celebrate this momentous occasion in 1859, those apparitions received by Belgian farm worker Adele Bryce. And so we're so excited today to, in the afterglow or on the heels of that first feast day celebration, we're excited to talk today with Father Joseph Aitona, the rector of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. Welcome to the show today, Father Joseph.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to talk with you. And as I say, it's been a big deal at the shrine, I'm quite sure, the name change and also the first feast day. Maybe you can talk a little bit about why the name change in the first place.
Yes, we were formerly known as Our Lady of Good Help, and I'm sure many of the locals will probably continue, at least in their heart, to refer to this place as Our Lady of Good Help. But we wanted to, a few reasons, we wanted to distinguish Our Lady of Champion very similar to the other Marian apparition sites like Our Lady of Lourdes in France, Our Lady of Fatima in Portugal, Our Lady of La Salette, etc., where the actual place where Our Lady appeared, Champion, Wisconsin, is within the name, so there's no confusion. Now, Good Help itself, many times people will hear the words and they'll say a different word like health or hope.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just practically speaking, the name change, it helps us to communicate the actual place and message of the shrine easier. But it's really from Adele Bryce herself, the visionary. She wanted to serve Our Lord through Our Lady in Champion, Belgium. And when she asked, when the people of the town here asked, what would you like this name? What's your suggestion? She said Champion, because that's where I always wanted to serve as a religious sister. So we're kind of honoring the visionary by changing the name to Our Lady of Champion. Besides the practical reasons, there certainly are spiritual reasons connected to that as well.
Amazing. We're talking today with Father Joseph Etona, the rector of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion, and they just celebrated their big feast day this past week. And when we for those people who don't know it, it always surprises. I mean, of course, I've done a great deal of study and discussion and a program on EWTN about the Our Lady of Champion apparition. But many American Catholics still are getting tuned in to what this is all about. And we have this singular case in history of an approved Marian apparition in the United States, and many people are still surprised to hear about it. Why don't we just dial it back a bit and tell the story of what happened there in 1859 with Belgian farm worker Adele Bryce?
Sure. As I mentioned, Adele wanted to serve as a religious sister in Belgium, but her parents basically came here to the United States, and she asked her spiritual director, since she wanted to serve Our Lord as a religious sister in Belgium, what she should do. But God's providence, we know He works in very mysterious ways at times, so she came with her parents here, and she was working at the grist mill to help with the family finances, and Our Lady appeared actually three times total. The first two times, she didn't actually say a word. But the last time after Adele saw her, and well, after the second time, she went to Sunday Mass, and she asked for counsel from the priest. And the priest basically told her, ask her who she is. What does she want from you? And then that's what she started off, that third apparition in 1859, when the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared. She said, who are you? And she said, I'm the Queen of Heaven who prays for the conversion of sinners, and I wish for you to do the same. So it's interesting how the Blessed Virgin Mary, out of all of the titles that she has, like we know she revealed herself as the Immaculate Conception in Lourdes, France, to St. Bernadette, but out of all the titles she chooses the first line she says, in terms of a spoken word, so to speak, to Adele, is the Queen of Heaven who prays for the conversion of sinners. And the first thing that she asks Adele to do is, and I wish for you to do the same. So eventually, I think if the people do research on it, there is a sending out, so to speak, of the Blessed Virgin Mary, go and fear nothing, I will be with you. And that is to teach the children their catechism, what is necessary for salvation, how to sign themselves, etc. But the first thing that Our Lady did ask her to do is to pray for the conversion of sinners. And she was very specific, and she tied in the sacraments. In my opinion, this is one of the most sacramental apparitions that is tied to the sacraments that's approved by the Church. So she says, you receive Holy Communion this morning and that as well, but you need to do more. Make a general confession and receive Holy Communion and offer your communion for the conversion of sinners. So again, the Eucharist is mentioned twice. Basically, the beginning of this message, along with confession, and then the actual verb to offer communion for the conversion of sinners. Now, I've been preaching a lot as a missionary. You know, I've been, as the Father of Mercy, we do parish missions. That's our primary apostolate. And I've been teaching about how people can and they really should offer communion for a specific intention, which should be mentally stated during the collect of Mass. But just the fact that she asked Adele Bryce to offer Holy Communion for the conversion of sinners, again, this is even before teaching the children their catechism and how to sign themselves, etc., is to first unite herself with the Holy Eucharist after going to confession. So we can't give what we don't have. So the primacy of evangelization and catechesis would always be being united with Jesus, especially through the sacraments. Now, again, with the conversion of sinners. Now, especially as a missionary, we know, like, if you read the promises of the Sacred Heart, if you have devotion especially to the Sacred Heart, priests will have this gift to reach hardened sinners through devotion to the Sacred Heart. Well, likewise, you can see Adele, obviously not a priest, but still uniting herself to Jesus in the Eucharist through his Sacred Heart, and then teaching them their catechism, what is necessary for salvation. So I think a lot of times the message gets, I don't know why, it seems like it gets lost, like the sacraments, the emphasis of the sacraments and praying, in penance and reparation for people's sins. So this place is a Eucharistic reparation site based on the message of Our Lady. And sometimes, again, that gets lost, but at least I wanted to mention that now.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Great reflections in this time of Eucharistic revival here in the United States. I think Our Lady of Champion can be front and center when we look at that as well. We're talking today with Father Joseph Aitona, the rector of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. And we're talking about the one and only church-approved Marian apparition in the history of the United States. And of course, when we talk about Our Lady of Champion, we must talk about the fire miracle. I think that's a big event, perhaps confirming the reality of the apparition, and it's celebrated every year at the shrine. And we may or may not know the exact date of the apparition. Many things are lost to history, and documentation is difficult to come by. But we have this occurrence of this fire miracle that happened around the time of the apparition, in which the shrine was spared. Talk a little bit about what is known and what is celebrated about this big event in 1871.
Yes, we're talking about the miracle from the Peshtigo fire, which to this date is basically the most deadliest fire in U.S. history, which was about the size of Rhode Island. So we're talking about a huge fire, and this is about 12 years to the day after the 12th year anniversary after the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared to Adele. So the Peshtigo fire basically just decimated everything in its path, all of the wind. I mean, even 2,000 people died from that fire, and we certainly want to pray for them and their families as well. But as the fire approached Peshtigo, Wisconsin, that is, as the fire approached this area of Champion, where the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared, basically it almost seemed like there was an invincible bubble, so to speak, like a force shield, if you will, that Our Lady protected this specific site where the fire just completely skipped and passed over this specific area. And it's interesting because even the fence, the inside of the fence was unscathed. All of everything outside of it was burned and charred. So there's no way by accident that could happen of the five acres that were here when Adele Bryce knew the fire was approaching this area of Champion, Wisconsin. She basically gathered the people into the chapel and they prayed the rosary, a procession of the rosary with the statue of Our Lady. And they were obviously fearful or concerned about what would happen, but again, the miracle where the fire just completely missed, so to speak, this specific area. So it certainly was a sign from God, in my opinion, that this place is hallowed. It's holy. I mean, not that other churches are not hollow. Obviously, any church, especially with the Blessed Sacrament, this is holy ground since Our Lord's real presence is there. But this specific place Our Lady chose, at least the only one approved here in the United States in terms of an apparition, where people would want to come here for healing, for refuge, for any intentions that they may have. I mean, it just proves it, that not only Our Lady appeared here, but this is a site or a specific place, maybe for renewal within the Church of the United States. I mean, we can go on and on about why she appeared here, and of course she has her own reasons and so forth, but this is a very special place that I think we can put on our bucket list, so to speak, as Catholics, especially here in the United States, since especially the fire just completely skipped or passed over it, the deadliest fire in U.S. history.
Yeah, absolutely. It's truly incredible. And it was because of this that we featured that on a special on NBC Today with Megyn Kelly. I wanted to highlight that, big event. And it is a result of that fire that we have an actual date, perhaps. Perhaps that is the traditional date of the feast day of the apparition. And then you have the fire miracle on that same date. And we had a feast day for the very first time this year, celebrated at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. Father Joseph, talk a little bit about how that came to be. How is it that in a very big sign of recognition from the Catholic Church that a local feast day was established?
Yes. Now, I must say this, and I was speaking a lot. Sorry if I didn't answer all of your questions this past question that you asked me, but I actually dub it, like I nicknamed the Triduum, the Champion Triduum. So October 7th is the Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary, where we remember especially the anniversary of the Battle of Lepanto.
Yes.
And then October 8th is the miracle from the Peshtigo fire, because that's when it happened, October 8th, 1871. And then October 9th is the actual anniversary of the apparition, at least the last apparition where Mary spoke to Adele. But that fire obviously lasted all the way from the evening to the morning, that is the next day. So it's all connected. Again, I just nickname it the Champion Triduum. Triduum is Latin for 3 days.
Yep.
So we weren't celebrating Our Lady of Good Help, which was changed to Our Lady of Champion, as a solemnity, that is liturgical solemnity. A solemnity would be of the highest rank within a universal calendar or even a local calendar in terms of the celebration of Mass. But the local bishop here, Bishop Ricken, sent basically a request to the Vatican's Dicastery for Divine Worship. They're the ones that handle the sacraments, etc., and asked if we could make this a solemnity. And they basically said, sure. I mean, you already have the authority to raise a solemnity, a specific feast day to a solemnity. So, for example, if your church is St. Therese or St. Joseph, that day would be a solemnity in that church, because that's the saint, that's the church is dedicated to that specific saint.
Sure.
So this is the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion. So this is the first ever, it didn't hit me until the Fathers of Mercy novices were here, and I was so busy, I didn't get a chance to really celebrate, because I was like doing interviews and talking to so many people, that in the evening when everything calmed down, I finally got a dessert to celebrate. I said, and then so one of the novices, he's new, he's like, well, why should we celebrate today? I was like, well, this is the first ever solemnity in the history of the Catholic Church to Our Lady of Champion.
Right.
I mean, this is the highest in terms of a liturgical celebration. This we need to celebrate. It calls for celebration. So you should have a dessert. I mean, you should do something that, you know, that you like to in honor of Jesus through Mary. You know, St. Francis, whenever he loved Christmas, and he would say, all right, well, people, you get double portions of food on Christmas in terms of a celebration, and even the animals, give them double portions of food. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily trying to compare this to Christmas, but it's still a solemnity where there should be some celebration. It's the first ever in the history of the Catholic Church. And through the fruits of Our Lady and through Adele and all of the pilgrims that have come here every single year, it certainly was a time to celebrate.
Absolutely. And perhaps someday we'll see some further recognitions from the Vatican, or making it a solemnity celebrated across the whole United States,
yes,
not just the local level.
God, hopefully.
And perhaps the Vatican someday will show recognition towards the supernatural character, and maybe someday a canonization cause for Adele Bryce, the visionary. So there are many things to hope and pray for, perhaps, in the future. And Father Aitona, as we wrap up the interview today, I've been to the shrine many, many times, of course, and every time I go, I have a great sense of peace, and I know that other people who visit say the exact same thing, and there still are miracles and blessings and graces that happen for people who go there. So I can't recommend more that people go and visit that shrine. What is your thought for your encouragement for people visiting the shrine?
Yes. Now, I know this may seem a little unorthodox, if I can even use the word, but to come here for certainly spiritual renewal, yes, but I mean to emphasize the sacraments of actually going to confession and offering communion for the conversion of sinners. I think out of solidarity of the first message and request to Adele, to have that in your mind. And again, I realize that people are coming here for especially physical healing, since many Marian apparition sites are recognized for physical healing. But I must say, I mean, we hear confessions here at least three times a day. We're in the confessional for hours here. So to get ready for heaven, you know, to get ready to be, to persevere being in the state of grace, I think this is especially a place for spiritual renewal, not that physical renewal can't happen here or physical healing, but just to have in mind of what it means to offer Holy Communion, to make a good confession, to pray the Holy Rosary, very basic things that are essential to our faith at times and that people have maybe forgotten. So maybe people only go to confession maybe once a year, or they only go every 5 years. So maybe after they come here, they can make it a regular habit. Maybe they'll start going to confession once a month. Even if they're not in the state of mortal sin, they can still go to confession to root out their venial sins, any vices that they have. So that's my take on it. Not that people can't come here for physical healing or for peace, not that you can separate peace from being in the state of grace and receiving the sacraments. But at times, I mean, for example, we have a Eucharistic healing service on the last Saturday of every month. And people are, I mean, they're sick. At times they're ill. And I understand that they're suffering. But to actually go to confession and offer Holy Communion, it certainly would help with the intentions that they have physically speaking. So that's my take on it. That's what I know the little time that we have. I thought I would at least mention that.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Joseph Aitona, a rector of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion, talking to us about this exciting news, the name change to Our Lady of Champion, and the very first solemnity celebrated on the local level there at the shrine to celebrate Mary under this title and celebrate that very first Marian apparition in history. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Joseph Aitona, for joining us on today's program.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
God bless. That was Father Joseph Aitona joining us today. For people who haven't visited the shrine, you got to check it out. It's a great place to do a pilgrimage. It's right outside of Green Bay, and people can find out more if they go to championshrine.org. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I love getting the emailed questions, and I love getting questions when I give a talk. I travel around the United States and go to various shrines and parishes and conferences and give presentations on miracles, and I always like to do a question and answer session at the end. People are curious about miracles happening from centuries ago and things that are being claimed today, so I do my best to try to answer them. And I have a really good question related to Our Lady of Champion, and that's the subject of our first interview. I hope people were able to tune in for Father Joseph Aitona talking to us about the first solemnity of Our Lady of Champion this year. And so the question is, how can Adele Bryce, the visionary of Our Lady of Champion, become a saint when everyone prays to Our Lady of Champion, the Virgin Mary? Don't you need to pray to just one saint for the miracle to count? Thank you, Jennifer. Well, thanks, Jennifer, for your great, great question. And it is true, and we've talked about this on very recent shows, that when it comes to miracles being considered for a canonization cause, you can only direct your prayers to the one saint. Of course, if you're in trouble and you need some help, you need a miracle, perhaps you're going to pray to all your friends, the saints. But in the event that you're trying to pray for a miracle usable in a canonization, which is a very specific effort, I realize, you've got to pray to just that one saint, because how would the canonization cause of the Vatican know who was the intercessory person in that case? So always it needs to be directed to that one saint. So We talk about Adele Bryce, the 28-year-old visionary at Our Lady of Champion in Green Bay, Wisconsin area, Champion, Wisconsin. And so how could she ever become a saint if people by default are praying to Our Lady of Champion being on site there and with a devotion there? How could she ever get any intercessory miracles? Well, there's an interesting Catholic loophole when it comes to intercessory miracles. It turns out that you can pray to a individual saint, and you can pray to the super saint, you might say, Mary, at the same time, and it still counts. So again, it's a funny loophole. We know Mary as the perhaps the greatest miracle working saint who ever was, but you can invoke the Virgin Mary and the potential saint, and if there is a miracle work that's recognized by the Vatican, it still counts. So quite an interesting thing, I think. So if you are looking to pray for the intercession of Adele Bryce and for the intercession of Our Lady of Champion, go right ahead. It will count. Thanks for your question, Jennifer. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we ask where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to that date in the calendar year. And we all know these big feast days of Our Lady of Fatima on May 13th, or we talk about Our Lady of Lourdes on February 11th, or Our Lady of Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, for each and every day of the calendar year, somewhere in the world, somebody, some country, some location is celebrating Mary under a different title. And so for today's date, October 14th, we've got the Virgin of Protection from Istanbul in Turkey in the year 911. And the story goes that a Church of St. Mary in the Blachernite district of Constantinople area was one of the most sacred sites in Byzantium. It was founded in 450 by Empress Aelia Pulcheria, and a fountain of holy water, a wonder-working Virgin Mary icon, and her robe and veil were held inside. And the Feast of Our Lady of Protection in Russian Prokhorov is celebrated October 14th, which is October 1st in the old calendar, and St. Andrew the Fool, who died in 936, his disciple Epiphanius, and other people who were praying experienced a vision of Mary in that church during an all-night vigil. The Virgin was said to enter the church, kneel down in tearful prayer, ascend, hold her veil over the congregation as a sign of her care and protection. And that is the Virgin of Protection from Istanbul in Turkey in the year 911. For more information on this fascinating devotion, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com. You can check out the Facebook page with 10,000 followers, or you can download the free app on the iOS App Store, 365 Days with Mary. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we look at people on the path to sainthood. We're talking about servants of God, venerable, blessed, before they have all their miracles and are recognized by Rome to be a saint. And we're talking about from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. These are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And this, of course, correlates to my television series, which airs on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, and also to my book, They Might Be Saints, which is available from EWTN Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com. And we talk about miracle workers and martyrs, and here's a martyr for today, Blessed Richard Crea from Ireland, whose memorial is October 14th today. And he was the son of a wealthy merchant, and as a young man, Richard worked in his father's business. However, he felt a call to the priesthood, and he studied at the University of Louvain in Belgium, where he was an excellent student, ordained in 1555. And he returned to Limerick in Ireland in 1556 and opened a school in an abandoned Dominican friary there. And he was chosen by the Archbishop of Armagh on Low Sunday in 1564. He was arrested in December of that year for the crime of acknowledging the authority of the Pope over the church. And after several months in prison and multiple interrogations, Crea escaped from the Tower of London in 1565 and fled to Louvain. He went from there to Spain and then back to Ireland in 1566, and he resumed his ministry and preached peace between the Irish and the English. He was arrested in 1567 in Killarney in Ireland, and a Dublin jury refused to convict Richard of anything, and his jailer helped him escape. But in October of 1567, he was arrested again and imprisoned again and returned to Ireland, where he resumed his ministry. He was arrested again in 1574. He was imprisoned in Dublin until 1575, at which point he was returned to the Tower of London, where he stayed until his death. While he was there, these periods when he was unchained, he ministered to other prisoners. He is considered a martyr. So he was born in Limerick, and he died, perhaps of poisoning there in the prison in the Tower of London in England. He was beatified by John Paul II in 1991, and he was declared venerable by John Paul II in 91. 92, he was declared a martyr and therefore blessed. So that is the might-be saint of the day, Blessed Richard Crea from Ireland. What an amazing story, in and out of prison so many times in his life. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with David Carollo, the executive director of the World Apostolate of Fatima, about the amazing sun miracle at Fatima on October 13th, 1917. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People often ask the question, what is the greatest modern miracle? And maybe they say, which miracle has been witnessed by the most people? And we might come up with that answer having occurred on October 13th, 1917, the sixth and final of those visions received by the three children of Fatima, the Cova de Iri, of course, the miracle of the sun, as it's referred to. And large numbers are mentioned of people who were there at the time, perhaps as many as 70,000 people, witnessed something spectacular in the sky relating to the sun and being a sign for the people there. Well, we're so excited because we've celebrated the anniversary of this great sun miracle of Fatima. It always reminds us to reflect on the true message of Fatima. And who better to join us and talk to us about that today is David Carollo, the executive director of the World Apostolate of Fatima. Welcome back to the program today, David.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
It's great to have you back. And of course, this is a big day. It's a big day for your shrine. I know you celebrated with a good-sized crowd yesterday and festivities, right, as you do every year to celebrate this big miracle. And of course, the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima is May 13th, but this is also sort of a secondary or auxiliary feast day, as you might say, some kind of a spiritual bonus that we have. Why is this day so important?
I think it's a little special because if you remember during the times of the previous five apparitions, Our Lady did say she was going to perform a miracle on this day so that people would believe. And I think that's really, this is really, one of the only things that's been ever, predicted as the time and place it was going to take place. And of course, 70,000 people, it's estimated, were there at Fatima on that day. And, but this wasn't just the faithful. The faithful were there. The skeptics were there.
Let's talk about that a little bit. There were people, newspaper writers from Il Secolo, secular newspaper, others, exactly, who were coming to perhaps make fun of the Catholics who were gathered out, sure, in the rain. Who were these other people who weren't believers who were showing up?
Well, I think so many of them were of the, secularists, I would say. Of course, keep in mind, we talk about government situations over the years. There was a very secular, truly a communist government that was in charge very strongly in Portugal during that time. The church was being persecuted. So even the people in the church, the bishops and that, they were so concerned about this because it was, it was going to bring out more persecution. And I know the reporter from O Secolo, who was there, the secular newspaper, was there to do a hatchet job in this thing, okay, to point out and start laughing at the people. Plus, keep in mind now, you got a day where there's a driving rainstorm. I mean, people are just drenched, to their core. And here they are waiting for this miracle. And this man who wrote this article for O Secolo, He was converted that day. He saw what happened. And I have that article framed on my office in Portuguese, of course.
I bet you, yeah.
There it is, you know. Many people were converted. But, yeah, you know,
Let's talk about the rain. I think for me, that's kind of a big part of the story that's interesting. I think that perhaps it said that it had been raining all morning or up until that point, and people were in puddles of mud coming out to see this potential miracle. And then the sun came out, and maybe the sun drying the rain, it was a sign of some sort.
Well, there was another miracle that occurred there. And we have an interview with Dominic Reyes, which our founder, John Hafford, interviewed him in 1957. He was a young boy at the time. He died soon after that interview, actually, in the late 50s. But in 1917, he was a young man, 10, 11, 12 years old, and he was there, and he had witnessed the whole thing. And as he said they were just drenched and soaked and muddy and everything. And then after the miracle of the sun, they looked at their clothes. Their clothes were clean. They were dry. They were almost like he'd just come from the cleaners. He said it was another miracle in itself. The whole thing was just, it was so divine. Obviously, the fact that the sun could be, you know, could leave its orbit, or we would leave orbit, however, and have this happen. Certainly, it's only the hand of God that could allow this. You know.
Absolutely, and I have to ask you this because conspiracy theories abound, especially with Fatima, of all different types. But
do they really? I didn't know that. No, I'm just
I know. You're that's part of your job is fielding some of the funny things that are related to this incredible miracle. But you know, there's been talk from different people who obviously are trying to find a naturalistic explanation for how it could be that Our Lady predicted on that very day at that time that there'd be a miracle and 70,000 showed up and there was this sun miracle. There have been people who have been perhaps talking about some atmospheric conditions that could have led to this. What are the conspiracy theories that come your way?
Well, Michael, there's always people out there to try to explain something from a phenomenon of nature. The same people who would say that when the Red Sea parted, it didn't really part, but that the seasons changed and it dried up and then it got wet. I've heard that one years ago.
Right.
Well, I don't know. It took an awful long time for the Israelis and the Egyptians to make their way across. But the point is, no. The people saw what they saw. 70,000 people, even if 5% of them gave their testimonies, you know, what's going on? How could you not believe? But there is that saying that always is out there, that for those who believe, no proof is necessary, and for those who do not believe, none will suffice. And I think that really, really is exactly what we have to consider.
Yeah, here. That hits the nail on the head. We're talking today with David Carollo, the executive director of the World Apostolate of Fatima, talking about that incredible miracle that happened on October 13th, 1917, the Fatima Sun Miracle, and as was predicted by Our Lady of Fatima. And one of the interesting things about this, of course, is that when we look at astrological data, we don't see the sun having moved that day or any provable, measurable difference between one day to the next. So we don't have that hard data, but we do have the testimony of many people. What, in your opinion, is the most powerful type of testimony that we hear? What did people see or claim to see that day?
Well, people, they saw the sun moving and come down onto the earth. I mean, it was one person made a comment that felt the heat on his shoulder, like the sun actually touched him. Okay, I mean, these are, you know, this is hard to dispel. This is not mass hysteria or mass, you know, hallucination or something. This was real because it's the hand of God. People say, well, if the sun came down, it would burn everybody up. Well, if God allowed that to happen, certainly it could have happened. But this is the whole point. It's like the whole concept of when we talk about poverty when it comes to God. What is poverty? Doesn't mean not having things physically. Poverty means that you understand that every breath you take is by the act of God. Okay. So if you accept that, how could you not accept the reality that he could have this happen? He can transport you to the sun tomorrow and bring you back without any physical damage if he wanted to. It's really believing in you know, the divine power. And I think that's what the whole idea of the miracle. That's why, you know, the miracle was promised so that people would believe these children and the message. That's what it's all about. It's not about what happened on that day as much as it is about the message of Fatima that was given the previous 5 months. The ask for the devotions, the warnings of what's coming, the vision of hell. These things, you know, you need to believe these things and live in accord with the Gospels. So the miracle of Fatima is just God pointing to say, okay, let me show you how powerful I am. Now, listen to my mother, what she's been telling you for 5 months.
Absolutely. I think that's so important. It's a sign of a sign, a pointing to the true message of Fatima. And we're talking today with David Carollo, the executive director of the World Apostolate of Fatima, the Blue Army, as it's been known. What did the children of Fatima report experiencing on this day of the sixth and final apparition? We have the testimony of various witnesses from the crowd, but what was the point of view of the visionaries themselves?
Well, I think the point of view of the visionaries was one that's, okay, well, here it is. We know some. Maybe, did they know the details of what was going to happen? No, I'm sure not. But they knew that this phenomenon was going to happen, a phenomenon was going to happen, and they saw so many things culminating in the message of Fatima. For example, Our Lady appearing at Our Lady of Mount Carmel with the brown scapular. Why do we promote the brown scapular? She appeared at Fatima with it, okay? Right. Why do we honor St. Joseph in the way we do? Well, who appeared here? St. Joseph holding the child Jesus. This was just like what they saw was an affirmation of our faith and what we were taught all along. That this is the Catholic message is what was given at Fatima. And it was a message, folks, wake up and live in accord with the Gospels once more. The children saw that. They saw that very clearly on that day. They saw so many people that were in such despair, but they also saw people that were so resigned to something. Many people started confessing their sins outside. Many people responded. But I think, you know, those who are maybe truly in the state of grace, truly in tune with what Our Lady had been asking, they probably had a sense of serenity during that time. And I believe that's the children. They had that sense of serenity because they knew this was the plan of God. Thank you for showing the people that we've been telling. It was a vindication for them, if you will, to use a term, you know, that we're not, you know, three crazy kids here. I mean, this is what we were given for the last months. And please follow the message of Fatima. That's really what it was all about.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with David Carollo, the executive director of the World Apostolate of Fatima, of perhaps the greatest miracle, modern-day miracle in history. Of course, we're talking about the Fatima Sun miracle on October 13th, 1917. Now, I know at your shrine yesterday, you had a big celebration for this Fatima Sun miracle, as you do for the feast day on May 13th every year as well. And so as we carry the Fatima message forward, I know that your shrine and your work is involved with the Eucharistic Revival, this big effort by the USCCB, the Bishop's Conference, to reignite Eucharistic devotion. How is your Fatima shrine connected with that?
Well, you know, keep in mind, the Fatima message began not in 1917, but the year before 1916, when the Angel of Peace appeared to the three children, and in that third apparition of the angel the year before, he gave them the Eucharist. You see, you know, Fatima, reparation is the foundation of the Fatima. It's a request of the Fatima message, Eucharistic reparation. The Eucharist is the foundation of our reparation. And during this time of the Eucharistic Revival, we have our program, the Night of Love, going out there. We're promoting the nocturnal adoration, as we have as an apostolate since our beginning, and we have a beautiful book, The Night of Love. It's available on our website, bluearmy.com, and we have the endorsement of Bishop Cousins, who is, of course, heading up the initiative of the Eucharistic Revival for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and we're going to participate in the procession coming from Connecticut to Indianapolis next year, not directly day by day, but we're going to be intermingling with our Pilgrim Virgin statue at different parishes, and anybody who is between Connecticut and Indianapolis, if you want to participate, let us know. We'd love to have you on board and your parish and bring this night of love. And we have many bishops across the country and priests who are very supportive of this program, because we're not going to solve the problems of the world, like what's going on in the Middle East right now. You know, Our Lady said at Fatima, war is a punishment for sin. Well, look at the world. Look at where we live. Look what's going on. This is the solution, Michael. It's living the Fatima message, but living it truly, in line with adoration of what we were given, what these children were given in 1916, when they were given the Eucharist and made to understand that is the source and summit of our faith. And that's what the bishops are trying to do now in this time of Eucharistic revival. And we're just very honored to be part of it.
Absolutely. Well, we're so grateful to you, David Carollo, the Executive Director of the World Apostolate of Fatima, for joining us on today's program and talking to us about the incredible Sun Miracle of Fatima, October 13th, 1917. And we encourage people to check out that website, bluearmy.com, for more information on the Night of Love and all the activities of the shrine there. Thank you so much, David, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
God bless. That was David Carollo, the Executive Director of the World Apostolate of Fatima, talking to us about that amazing Sun Miracle. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Father Joseph Aitona, the rector of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Champion, and David Carollo, the Executive Director of the World Apostolate of Fatima. Check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from Tan Books and available at ewtnrc.com. I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter. We're from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events. Whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth a hunt. I'll talk to you next week.